here in Chicago at the NBA Draft Combine. Today I brought in Rafael Barlow from NBA Big Board to talk about what's been going on here in Chicago, some NBA draft talk, and I also talked a little bit at the top of the show about what's going on in the NBA playoffs. That's coming up next. Welcome back to another episode of the Kevin O'Connor Show. I got Rafael Barlow coming up in a minute talking about the NBA draft. First, a couple words on what went down Tuesday night in the NBA. Big week here, of course. OKC 112-105 victory over the Denver Nuggets to go up 3-2 in the series. This might be what determines actually who wins the finals. I think the winner of the finals is going to come out of this series. And OKC, what a fourth quarter, man. We're seeing this team grow before our eyes. 34-19 in the fourth quarter. You had Adelman on the Denver side taking a risk, played Jokic and Murray entire fourth quarter, felt like they ran out of steam. Jokic 13 points on only 4 or 6. He only took 6 shots in the fourth quarter in part because of OKC's defense, but Jamal Murray only 1 of 6 from the field in that fourth quarter as part of a 1-for-15 effort from everybody else not named Jokic in that fourth quarter. And OKC's defense was magnificent. And I thought that was in part of Mark Daigneault. You know, listening to this podcast, I've been super, super critical of Daigneault in this series with some of his endgame decision-making. But in this game, played Jalen Williams for 3 minutes and 22 seconds. Very big 3 minutes and 22 seconds. It felt more like 30 minutes. OKC was a +8. With Jalen Williams in the fourth quarter, going with his spacing rather than extending Hartenstein in that fourth quarter. He stuck with Lu Dort, who hit 3 absolutely massive big balls, 3-pointers, basically right after he checked in the fourth quarter to help bring OKC back. And Daigneault, unlike Adelman, rested SGA 2 minutes to start the quarter, who played a perfect fourth. SGA grown before our eyes. I feel like this Denver championship pedigree, this team is forcing OKC to grow up before our eyes. They're one of the youngest teams in basketball. They got one of the younger head coaches. There's a lack of experience on this team aside from Caruso, but he's Alex Caruso. He's not a key figure on this team. And here they are growing up right here in front of us. It's pretty amazing to see. And I have a hard time seeing Denver win 2 in a row against Oklahoma City. Of course, the Pacers also ended the season for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Indiana won that game 114-105. And for Cleveland, a lot of time to talk about the offseason coming up ahead. But Ty Jerome, he was horrible in this series. 32.3% from two-point range, 25% from three. Could barely get the ball up past half court at times. He was overwhelmed on defense. Are they going to keep him? Or did his price get lowered so much that they decide to keep him? And he's just a sixth man. Jared Allen. I mean, I like Jared Allen. I'm a Jared Allen guy. I thought he was a all-star caliber talent this year. 2 points, 2 rebounds in 20 minutes in game 4. 9 points, 4 rebounds in 30 minutes in game 5. Like, that's not enough from a guy making the money that he does, that plays the role that he does for this team. And this is the second year in a row we've seen him get beasted in the postseason. It happened against Mo Wagner against Orlando. It happened against Mitchell Robinson with the Knicks last year. It's happening against Miles Turner this year against Indiana. And with Garland was injured, so I'll forgive his performance, but the Cavaliers are going to enter a summer where they don't have a lot of money. They don't have a lot of flexibility. They get the 49th and 58th pick in the draft, and they're going to have to take a long, hard look in the mirror at who are the guys that we're going to move forward with. I think Mitchell's a keeper for sure. Mobley is a keeper, and you could argue he should have had a bigger role against Indiana. But ultimately, Cavs have to make some changes this summer just simply due to the fact of their enormous payroll as well. And for Indiana, second East Finals in a row. I can't wait to preview this series, likely against the Knicks, assuming the Knicks do finish off the Celtics without Tatum. And we did find out Tatum, unfortunately, has that ruptured Achilles. Awful news for Boston and their future. But for Indiana and the Knicks, I mean, Indiana beat the Knicks in 7 last year in the second round before getting swept by Boston, a full-strength Boston, in the Eastern Conference Finals. I like Indiana's chances, but we'll talk more about a potential Pacers and Knicks series later in the week, probably with Tom Haverstraw on Friday's show. about how that might go down if that does indeed happen. But anyway, it's time to talk a little bit of draft because it is draft combine week. We talked about the lottery results earlier in the week. I brought on Rafael Barlow, who does his amazing work for NBA Big Board. It's his Substack. He does his podcast with Locked On, NBA Big Board podcast, talking draft with his brother, James Barlow. And here's my conversation with Rafael Barlow talking NBA drafts. Rafael, thanks for joining me today, man.
No problem. I'm excited about this
one. Yeah, man. Well, I mean, we've known each other for a few years. It's our first time podcasting together. We're here in Chicago at the NBA Draft Combine. In this postseason, we've seen more physical play than we've seen in a long ass time.
Yep.
How much has, from a draft standpoint, this physical play in the postseason impacted the way you're thinking about prospects and evaluating them?
It's made me think about it a lot. It's actually shifted my board in some ways because I'm looking at guys. All right, can this guy be targeted? Is he someone that teams are going to hunt? Because you watch the playoffs. If you are a liability on defense, teams are hunting you every single play. So now I'm like, all right, is this guy someone that's going to be hunted? And does he have enough offense to stay on the floor? So I'm looking at like a guy like Carter Bryant. I wasn't as high on him before. I mean, 6 points per game. But we're talking about somebody that could possibly be a lottery pick despite averaging just 6 points a game. I think he played like 19 minutes. But I think for him, because he can defend, that should put him in a position where he can stay on the floor. And he shot 37% from three this year.
Great finish to the season for him from three.
Wasn't a high volume of attempts, but if he can defend and knock down open shots, then you're like, okay, he should be able to get playoff minutes. And so the playoffs have definitely shifted how I feel about some prospects.
How about a guy like Cedric Coward, who you and I are both high on? I wasn't totally sure he'd end up declaring after playing only six games at Washington State last year. So I kind of had him off my board for a while. But I think you've had him top 20 for basically the whole year.
Yeah.
You've always been high on him all year long. And now a lot of people, including me, are catching up to you. Somebody like him, I feel like, is a good example of somebody, like you said, with Carter Bryant, where he's going to be safe in terms of his floor come playoff time in the NBA.
Yeah, especially if he can shoot. I mean, the measurables, we got him officially like, 7'2" wingspan?
7'2" wingspan, that's like 6'5 and a quarter without shoes, plus nine difference is crazy.
That's crazy. I mean, I don't know where he buys sweaters at, but he should have the money now to get a good tailor. But other than that, how do you buy a long sleeve shirt or a sweater with that wingspan? But yeah, I think that he's someone that it's playable in the playoffs. He can shoot, he can pass. And even though it was just a small sample size of six games, I really thought that he was a first-round pick based off of what I saw last year at Eastern Washington.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think I interviewed him for this podcast, which will air it at some point. And it's like, you know, I talked to him about, like, the post game he has. Yep. Six or seven, post-ups a game at Eastern Washington.
Yep.
He's super versatile. He has so many different ways that he can get you on offense. And defensively, the dude with his wingspan, I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
7'2", and he brings intensity as well. So I think like somebody like him, who's like a guy that you've dropped down your board because of either, you know, concerns about the postseason or just what you've seen in recent weeks?
Jace Richardson.
Okay. His size.
He measured small.
I like Jace.
One reason why I haven't dropped him even further is because I don't want to make the same mistake I made with Jerick McCain last year. But the efficiency is there. He measured at 6 foot. He did have a plus six wingspan.
6 foot six wingspan, right.
Which is good. You'll take that. I don't know if he's a one or if he's a two.
He plays bigger than 6 foot. His finishing at the rim, he shot like almost 70%.
I mean, he has amazing touch on his floater. And that's the weird thing about when you look at the rim stats, you would think that he's finishing right at the rim. But for him, it's just all touch shots and floaters. I'm torn between, all right, does he have more game than what he was able to show at Michigan State? He didn't really have a lot of minutes. I think there was a couple game stretch where he was like the primary ball handler. Or did Michigan State really put him in the best situation to succeed? And that's where I'm a little bit torn at. But I wonder at that size. I mean, we've seen Brunson, who's phenomenal, and he's undersized, carry a team.
He's an outlier with footwork, though.
He's an outlier in strength. And so I do have some concerns about Jace Richardson on the defensive end. Is he someone that will get targeted in the playoffs?
Well, what about like with Indiana? Andrew Nembhard is a playoff riser for them.
Yep.
And he's what, 6'3 with shoes, I think, something around along those lines, or maybe 6'4 with shoes.
He's a guy that I know I didn't see this when he came out of college. he's a lot stronger than he's given credit for. Yes. I think Andrew Nembhard is also somewhat of an outlier in a sense.
I mean, also defensively, the dude is a monster. Like, he makes such timely plays, and his awareness is on another level. His brother will be in this year's draft class, Ryan Nembhard, who is much smaller than Andrew Nembhard, but he's like pure point guard, throwback, classic point guard. I like him as a late second round pick or like a top undrafted guy. Like, I'd want to gamble on another Nembhard brother.
Yeah. You know, I'm from Omaha, born and raised, and, you know, Creighton fans are still a little bit bitter of him leaving. But I like him a lot. I mean, he led the nation in assists. And I had wrote an article right before the G League Elite Camp that if I am a big or a player in that camp, I'm praying that I'm on Ryan Nembhard's team. And I think two of the guys on his team got invited to the NBA Combine because he knows how to get guys the ball in the right spot. He's like the ideal third point guard that you will want on an NBA team. Doesn't turn the ball over, makes the right plays, gets guys the ball in their spots. And he shot the ball well at the Combine yesterday.
Yeah, he did shoot the ball well. And obviously, like, it's just Combine.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think anybody like is going to read into it too much with the shooting numbers, but it's nice.
Yeah.
It's nice to see that he's shooting the ball well in that setting. You'd rather that than like the Colin Murray Boyles misses all over, air balls. And I'm a Murray Boyles guy.
I'm
falling out of love. Well, tell me why I should continue to fall out of love, because you said you're not a Colin Murray Boyles guy.
I like him for the college game, and I'm not big on just making apples to apples comparisons, but he's a guy I can't put in a box as who to compare him to. I've seen some Draymond Green comparisons. I don't think he's
Draymond.
I got
that on my draft guide. I know he's not Draymond. He's not all-time. There's no Draymond. He's not all-time level Draymond, but I think
there's shades of it.
Yeah, exactly. There's shades of it, and like I think he's a Draymond in the sense, Draymond-esque in the sense that system player on offense where fit is going to be everything.
Yeah.
Like it is with Draymond. He is in the perfect position in Golden State playing with Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson and KD and all those guys over the years and Steve Kerr's system. It was just perfect. The stars aligned for Draymond there.
But you know what? We talked about Russell Westbrook apologies. I might be a Draymond apologist. I've seen Draymond, and this is one of the reasons I'm like a big Draymond fan. It was like Mo Williams a few years ago had these runs in Dallas. He called it Grind Week, where he had different NBA players come in and train. And Draymond took a team of 9 NBA guys, and they beat a team of 5 NBA guys because he called out what they did. He literally, like, made these guys feel like they were Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. And ever since then, I felt like, you know what, Draymond can play on any team just because of the way he defends. He has a different leadership style that can, you know, it can rub people the wrong way. A little hands-on leadership. But I've seen him, like, literally put a battery in guys' back and just make them step up their level of play. So I think Draymond, as his skill level has decreased and we've seen the antics increase, but I think that, like, from his intangibles, that makes him so unique that on top of just the weird measurements and the fact that he can play the 5.
Well, and that's the thing with Murray Boyles. It's like he has very similar measurements. Yeah. It's just what makes Draymond is happening up here.
Yeah.
It's between the ears. Like what it's like the yin and yang thing, you know, the two sides of the same coin with Draymond. What infuriates people sometimes with him is also what makes him a legendary defensive player.
And the way that, like, just even in this, I mean, it was just a random pickup game where they had NBA refs.
And he's playing
the way
like
he
that.
Worked the refs.
And I remember, even a pickup?
Yes, Mo was.
You're telling me he was yelling at the refs?
He was yelling at the refs, but he was baiting him to, like, he said, this is what he's going to do. This is what he's going to do. He's yelling at the refs. And I remember Mo pulled me to the side and he says, you know, we're getting ready for the season in every way. And this is what Draymond is doing. He's getting ready for the season. He's literally working the refs and changing the dynamics of the court. So that's what makes Draymond so unique. So that's why it's hard for me to compare anyone to him. But I get the comparisons a little bit for CMB because he is a good passer. I don't know if he can, like, initiate the offense like Draymond can, but I feel like he's...
Draymond was fast in his prime.
Yeah.
Like, just so quick on the floor.
Yep. And the way he pushed the ball up, I think Colin Murray Boyles is probably a better passer. Well, not better, but he's a similar passer in like the half court. But I think he needs to kind of be featured a little bit to unlock his passing.
Yeah, I've like slowly dropped him down my board because like you're seeing in this postseason, you've seen it for years. Like we saw it like a decade ago with Tony Allen and Andre Roberson. Yeah. You're going to help off these non-shooters. And when Murray boils, we already have questions about him as a shooter. And then you see him at the star shooting competition, everything he did with the shooting this week at the combine, he's airballing.
You know what's messed up about that, though, was the fact that it was posted.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of messed up because it just kind of really feeds into the questions that we already had. I mean, he wasn't the only one that really struggled.
We're going to see the numbers at least.
Yeah. I guess once there's video behind it, it I've seen some of the chatter after the video. But there were some other guys that really struggled with their shooting too. Mm-hmm. But the fact that his was posted and it was like so close. that's as close up as you can get. So I thought that was a little interesting.
I still like him, but I'm souring a little bit. In all likelihood, Dallas drafts Cooper Flagg. Number, would you say 100%, or are you going to like 90%? What percentage would you give it that Dallas is drafting Cooper Flagg in late June?
90.
Okay. Where's the 10% that you're?
Giannis is rumored to be open to exploring other options, so I think every team should at least kick the tires on that. I do think that other teams have a better offer for Giannis, but if you're Milwaukee and maybe you feel like you want number one. You want the guy that is a good transition as far as keeping the fan base excited. Maybe.
Sure. I think if I'm Giannis, though, I'd rather go to, San Antonio or Houston if it's one of those three teams from Texas, personally.
Why is that? Giannis.
I think with Houston younger, I think they, Ime Udoka, who he is as a coach, and their defense that they have, the established culture, what they're missing as a go-to scorer and what Giannis could provide. You can see what they could be with you if you're Giannis. With San Antonio, it's kind of a cleaner slate. You built a legacy in Milwaukee. You built a team up with you as the centerpiece. With San Antonio, they haven't done anything yet. They have Victor Wembanyama. He'll always be the guy there. But if you're Giannis, I think you'd be part of that story as well as another one of the guys there. And in Dallas, I think they've tarnished everything. I think the fan base, I've never seen a fan base less excited about getting the number one pick in a draft.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, I'm not there. I've been here. It's one of those things where I kind of wish I was here and there just kind of to see the pulse. I think they're excited.
At least online. A lot of the Mavs fans in my life are excited, but also like, this is still weird.
Yeah, it's still weird. I think it
it's
really,
not just pure bliss. It's always pure bliss. It's not all pure bliss is what I'm saying.
I think so. Oh, I think that is because fans are like, they despise Nico. And
they still want him fired so he doesn't screw it up.
This gives him an extension. This helps him out because I go to all the Mavs home games and I saw the crowd and the Fire Nico shirts. And every time they put somebody on the Jumbotron, somebody would lift up their shirt, have another shirt underneath. And I think that getting Cooper Flagg is going to help as far as the season tickets. So the arena is going to be packed again next year. There's going to be some buzz and excitement there. And I guess some fans are like, Nico got, got helped out by this a lot.
Yeah, he did. He definitely did. Ultimately, though, we'll see what happens there. The draft, really starts at two in terms of which players get selected. It will be Cooper one, depending on who is there, likely Dallas. But at two with San Antonio, Dylan Harper, not a fit with Stephon Castle and De'Aaron Fox. I would not like that fit for Dylan Harper if I'm in his camp. San Antonio is going to be in that Giannis sweepstakes as well, I would expect. It's going to depend on who Giannis signals to that he wants to go there, with a team making some significant offer to the Bucks for him. What do you expect to happen at number two with that pick that San Antonio currently has?
I'm torn on it. I agree. I don't think that is the best fit for Dylan Harper. I think he's best with the ball in his hands. So if I'm him or his camp, I'm like, I kind of hope this Milwaukee thing, it happens. But I'm not sure what they're going to do. I would definitely explore trading for Giannis. How often can you get a guy like Giannis to pair with Wembanyama? And we didn't even get a chance to really see. Did they even play a game together? De'Aaron and Victor?
Who was that? Wembanyama and Foxy?
Yeah.
Said? They played a few, like, but not Miss Penny. A very small amount.
Small amount of games. So yeah, if I'm San Antonio, I'm definitely trying to get Giannis. I mean, you don't get a chance to get a 2-time MVP.
Yeah. I mean, he's one of the greatest players of all time. Top 20, top 25 all time with a chance to rise significantly.
Yep, and a champion.
Exactly.
So, I'm definitely like trying to make that move. And I think it would be better for Dylan Harper also.
Yeah, I think so as well. For Dylan Harper, it'd be for the best. And for Giannis, to me, like, San Antonio is the number one team. Because also the thing with Dallas is Kyrie's out for most, if not all, of next year. It's kind of similar to your Dame situation that you already have with the Bucks. Yeah. I want to go to a team where I feel like, A, I can build something and like have it shaped into, you know, like similar to Milwaukee, into your own image. You're part of building that out. Whereas with Dallas, I don't know. I wouldn't love the vibes there, if I'm honest. But then again, I'm biased. I'm speaking only from myself. I got an email from Kev from Philly, and he's, you know, emailed into the show before, and he had a draft question for us. He said, or draft comment for us. He said, I agree with like 94% of your mock draft, but I got Thomas Sorber going in the lottery. Double big lineups are coming back thanks to Jokic. You're somebody, you interviewed Maxime Raynaud out of Stanford. You have him 12 on your board. Thomas Sorber, another big, I have him, I think, in the late 20s. I'm not quite as high on him, but the double big thing that we're seeing from a lot of teams and some important minutes in the postseason, Adams and Şengün. Obviously, you're seeing Mitchell Robinson and Karl Anthony Towns on the floor as well. How much has that changed your evaluation of some of these bigs and how their role could be moving forward in the NBA, whether it's Sorber, whether it's Raynaud, or whoever else comes to mind?
Yeah, there's a couple guys in the lottery that I think if they go the way I would have it, they would play in some double big lineups. I actually absolutely love Derek Queen in Portland. I would love to see like a Derek Queen or 4-5 pick and roll between him and Donovan Clingan.
Oh, that'd be fun.
And then I would love to see Raynaud and Victor Wembanyama in San Antonio. I mean, they were teammates before. 2 7-footers that can shoot the ball. I just like that fit. Now, if this Giannis thing happens, then pick number 14 is definitely probably going to the Bucks.
Could you do a triple big lineup though? I mean, I'm serious. I'm not, you know, I'm like, could you, like, Victor with his shooting and his versatility.
With Giannis's
perimeter defense, could you, in theory, have 3 bigs on the floor?
That would be interesting. I mean, you talk about the game just changing right before our eyes. I mean, it happens every few years. That would be very, very interesting.
Or Victor can run point. Raynaud can pick and pop.
That's crazy.
He can play on the perimeter. And Raynaud can handle a little bit, too, attacking closeouts.
Yeah. You just have to wonder, can they consistently knock down enough shots in a playoff setting?
7 minutes in a game. Not the main lineup, but a lineup. Something you can go to.
It'd be tough to get a sideline out of bounds play off with that. And
all that play.
Yeah.
They can cover the whole court stretching their arms out.
But yeah, I do think the 2 big lineups are coming back. I never would have thought I'd see Şengün and Adams on the floor together. I thought that was very interesting. Mm-hmm.
It was one of the best lineups in basketball through the whole regular season and the postseason. They were the whole reason why they went to 7 with the Warriors.
Yep.
Those guys were great together. So I do think the double big lineup is back in certain situations. That might not be the main thing where like it's you see teams starting with it, but I think it's effective as long as one of those bigs, and I say that, Şengün and Adams, neither of them can shoot. So, like, it worked for them because, like, Adams is a truly elite rebounder, Şengün an elite rebounder as well. But it's nice when one of those bigs can at least space the floor.
Yeah.
That's the benefit there. Do you think Raynaud will go in the lottery? Because I think I have him 15 on my board right now, and I like him as a lottery talent, but a lot of people project him in the 20s.
I don't know, because I've talked to a couple scouts, and they have him in the same lottery range. Now, are they the decision makers? No. And, of course, you know, in the NBA front office, there could be 15 different opinions. But I have talked to some scouts that have told me that they are as high on him as I am. I've seen like a lot of the mocks don't have him that high, which I don't understand. You're talking about a guy that averaged, 20-11. He was second in the ACC in scoring, first in rebounding, was only one of 2 guys over 7 foot to make over 60 threes. I think Lauri Markkanen was the only other player. And he's skilled, left hook, right hook. He's athletic. He can run the floor. And he told me he only caught 2 lobs the whole season.
That's crazy.
Only 2 lobs.
Only 2 lobs.
The whole season. That's crazy. And Raynaud is is a guy that remembers plays. Like the way he was breaking down different plays when I started interviewing him. Very, very smart. But I love the fact that he's very, very smart, extremely confident, but it doesn't come off in a cocky way. I'm a big fan. I became an even bigger fan when I had a chance to sit down and interview him and watch him work out. And I just think that he's grossly underrated.
Yeah, he'll catch two lobs in his first summer league game.
Yeah. Yeah. If he gets the right, you know, summer league.
Yeah, I mean, summer league, some of those point guards, they're not passing the ball.
I remember the Shingun rookie year where it was like Jalen Green, Josh Christopher, Marcus Foster from Creighton.
Yeah.
And he didn't get any touches. When I knew Shingun was going to be good, I think maybe like the third quarter, he grabbed a rebound and waved everybody off and caught his own play. But
how have you seen the NIL impact the draft this year?
I mean, we just saw yesterday Boogie Flan decided to withdraw from the draft.
Isaiah, peace out, the first day. See out, ya. Yeah.
Well, Isaiah Evans, I don't even know if he came.
I mean, he was in and out. He was at one point he was in, then he went back, and then he was in, and I think he's now back.
Yeah,
at Kentucky. I'm sorry, not yeah, Kentucky, Duke. Yeah. And I think with Evans, part of that might be because Coward is likely in.
But he didn't even know that.
He didn't even, but he might he did have some intel, possibly. Yeah. I mean, well, maybe then, he knew that Coward's, you know.
So you think he saw Coward's arms in the hotel? So you like, know what?
I'll go get those minutes at Duke. Yeah. They're my minutes.
He's not coming. Yeah.
I know, I'm serious. I guarantee that had to have been part of his circles conversations with that decision. He's especially, like, all right, I'm going back.
Yeah, especially in the hotel, the way the hotel is, you see all the players coming in. Maybe he's on the elevator with him, saw dude's arms going down to his knees.
The sweater doesn't fit.
Yeah. So, oh, no. He's going to measure well. Okay.
I'm going back.
I'm going back. I'm out of here.
I mean, it has made the draft class a bit more shallow.
And older
as well.
It's like either you are a projected freshman lottery pick or a senior.
Yeah.
There's not a lot. I mean, how many non-seniors you have? What? Colin Murray Boyles, Condon, Danny Wolf. I know I'm probably forgetting someone. Other than that, once you go down,
not many.
It's a lot of seniors.
Yeah, it's true. It's a lot of seniors. Do you like it this way? Do you prefer it this way? What's your impression about how teams feel about it as well?
I'm torn because I talked to JT Toppin last week in Dallas.
And he went back.
He went back. Didn't even test.
Yeah.
Like I thought he was a top 35-ish guy. I felt like, you know, there were some areas.
I had him in the same exact area.
That he needed to show teams. And he got $4.1 million. That's the equivalent of being the 13th pick in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
So why not go to get that type of money? You know you're going to play 30 minutes per game and then work on whatever, you know, flaws teams say you have in college, get paid. And so I think that's going to be the case going forward. So I think it's going to have a big impact. And then we'll find out.
So you got $4.1 million?
That's what I heard. And then when I mentioned it to him, he didn't deny it. He actually told me he had an offer that was even higher from another school.
Because his teammate, Darian Williams, who is testing the waters still, potential second round draft pick. We saw him in the tournament.
But he had a Texas Tech backpack on yesterday at the combine.
Oh, he did. So he still could go back to Texas Tech. But that's the thing. Testing the waters in the NBA and, you know, transfer portal, like you can negotiate, right?
Yeah, I think some guys are, it's a negotiating tactic.
Yeah.
Like, I talked to a GM yesterday. He's like, why should we waste time bringing these guys in? Because
combine.
But too, like for individual workouts, because they're like, we know that what their projected range is, there's a lot more money on the table. Are they just using us to, you know, get a bigger NIL bag from the school? We're in uncharted territory right now.
Yeah.
So I don't think a lot of teams know what to think. I actually spoke to an agent who has a player that has a significant offer on the table to return to school. And he said that he hopes a lot of the underclassmen return and his guy can shoot up higher than he was projected to go because everyone else decides to go back to school. So that's a dynamic that I never thought about.
Interesting. I mean, it is fascinating. Like how many, like with my draft guide, we launched with, I think, 60 profiles a month or two ago. And it's like, I think like 17 of those guys we had to remove or something like that. I forget the exact number.
The fact that they're not even testing.
Yeah, not even testing. They're not even here this week.
Yeah. So,
it's crazy. Like, that's more than I can ever remember. Like, you always got to remove people from your rankings, always got to remove people from your board. And with my draft guide over the years, I don't think there's ever been so many before the combine.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, okay, we got to take him out and add some more profiles.
Even like Boogie, just... I'm going to come this for week. A day and okay, I'm cool.
Just wanted some deep dish from Chicago. You eating anything good out here?
I haven't had time. I haven't really had time to eat. I've been eating the junk food from the hotels and the combine and spending like
Fritos and Lay's chips or whatever. Yeah.
$6.54 a giant cookie, banana nut bread. I haven't had a chance, but hopefully later on today I'll get a chance to eat some
deep dish out here.
My brother just had your Giordano's for the first time.
Oh, wow.
And I told him, I said, if you can finish a whole Giordano's pizza, you are.
Is that the number one deep dish spot here?
I think it's the number one for the out of towners. I think the locals may have their own.
Lou Malnati's is my favorite that I've had here.
Okay, I haven't tried that one.
Okay, Lou Malnati's I've had, I don't know, last time I was in Chicago, it's been years since I've been in the combine.
Okay.
Just because I've been, you know, focused with playoffs and whatnot and work from home for draft stuff. But this year we wanted to do some interviews like this in person, but
I'm gonna check it out.
I'm craving some deep dish.
I'm gonna check it out. Yeah, you can't leave.
I got to get rid of this belly, but I'm also
I feel like it's an exception. Like for me, I feel like, you know what? I definitely want to get in better shape this summer, but I'm in Chicago.
It's in Chicago. Yeah. Yeah. This means a little bit more working out you got to do, more motivation.
Well, maybe I'll walk from, you know, the hotel to where I'm staying.
So with your Substack, NBA Big Board, Chad Ford initially found that and then he found you. Mm-hmm. How did you get connected with Chad Ford back in the day?
One day he sent me an email and I was like, I thought it was spam. And so I guess it was because
One of those Russell Westbrook bots.
it was really Chad. So during COVID, I started a podcast. It was something that I had always wanted to do. I had my website, NBA Draft Junkies, and I started a podcast. There was nothing to do in COVID. And I was actually living in China when it happened. So I ended up coming back.
With Hanson Yang?
No, but I heard the name at the time, but I was like living in China when COVID happened. And so I tell people I experienced it in two different continents. It was the weirdest, the weirdest thing ever, because they said, and of course I can't understand Chinese, but they said, we advise you to stay in.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I looked out my window and I thought the world ended.
Oh my God.
And I was the last one. I mean, China is like, imagine New York City. There's no cars moving. There's nobody walking. I walked in a mall.
This was probably January, something like before.
Yes, it was January 15th or something like that.
Like 2 months before the NBA shutdown.
Yes. And so I remember thinking, all right, I'm going to go home for a couple weeks. And I started getting worse. So then I said, all right, I'm going to go back to the States. And so when I got back, I had nothing to do. And I just started a podcast and I was recording every day. And then the Locked On Network reached out to me. They wanted to start an NBA draft podcast. I did that. And then one day Chad asked me to come on and be a guest. And then from there, I came on a few times. And then one day he called me. He's like, you know what? I'm thinking about retiring. And it actually started from a tweet. Someone asked me, if I won $1 million or $10 million, what would I do? And I said, I don't think my life would change too much. I'd have a lot more money, but I would still do the same thing. I wouldn't have a job that I would quit. And he said, he saw the tweet. And he was thinking about retiring. He just said, that's my guy. And then one day he reached out to me and told me he was thinking about retiring after the draft. And he wanted me to take over the newsletter. And I was like, really? And I was like, okay, cool. And then I'll never forget, it was like an April morning. And I woke up, I had a gazillion messages. And he had announced his retirement.
Wow.
Before he even told me that he was going to do it. And then it was a little bit of pressure. Because, you know, Chad is like one of the...
He's a legend.
Yeah. I mean, he's one of the first guys to really cover the draft. And then that's just kind of how I got here.
I mean, I think you do a great job, Raphael, with it. I mean, you and your brother, James, on the podcast, obviously your brothers, you guys have great chemistry.
Yeah.
And I think the thing I always respect about the work you do is, like, you're not afraid to state your opinion. You're not going to you're not afraid to go away from this so-called consensus, which isn't actually a real thing.
Yeah.
There's no consensus. You talk to people in the league. There's people of the guy number two, number 12 on their board.
Yeah.
And they're like, Dylan Harper, why is he in the top five? You know, like those people exist. And I think, you know, with Liam McNeely, you get him in the 30s.
Yep.
There's plenty of people who have him in the teens.
Mm-hmm.
It's like stuff like that. I appreciate and respect about you. You do the work, and you show it, and you make good content on the pod side and on the written side of Substack. So it's pretty cool to see what you're building out there.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm just not afraid to be wrong anymore. There's been too many times where I didn't trust my gut, and I went with the consensus, and I was like, you know what? I should have just trusted my gut. And so... Yes, you know.
I still make those mistakes. In my gut, I wanted to have Amen and Ausar ahead of Scoot. I didn't do it. Too much of a baby. I didn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, it was one last year, Cody Williams. I liked Matas over Cody Williams. And I don't remember what I had it, but I think I kind of went with the consensus a little bit. And I think Matas Wazelis is a much better prospect than Cody Williams.
Sure.
I mean, at least from one year.
It was a rough year for Cody Williams in Utah. And I mean, for Matas Wazelis in here in Chicago, it looks like one of the steals falling to number 11. Like
I thought he was going five.
He worked out for Atlanta at number one. Like they at least looked at him. They didn't take him, but they thought about him.
Yep.
And they just favored Ricochet. And then he falls to 11. Kind of crazy. But ultimately, I mean, looks like the best case scenario for him. And it's true, man. Like the draft is tough. It's an inexact science. Sometimes situation and opportunity and fit in your environment makes a pivotal difference and whether those guys will be successes or failures. That's why you just got to trust your gut and not worry about being wrong or right. It's just about trusting your gut. But Raphael, thanks for joining me today, man. I really appreciate it.
No problem. I enjoyed this so much.
Thank you, man. Big thank you to Raphael Barlow for joining me on today's episode of the Kevin O'Connor Show. Thanks to Adi Ismail. We got tons of producers on this episode. We got people in Chicago. We got Emmy and Mike. Thanks to everybody for producing today's episode. Thank you to you for giving us a listen. Please give us a 5-star rating on Spotify and Apple and a thumbs up on YouTube if you have not done so already. It really does help us out. We'll be back again tomorrow with a special guest from here in Chicago at the Draft Combine, talking more drafts as well. And then I'll be back again on Friday with Tom Havistrom.